For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Week 14 edition here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. We were off last week. I don't want to say we were off. I didn't do a show last week. It's not like I have a schedule or anything like that, but I probably could have done one if I had really, really, really gotten after it, and I didn't do that. I want to apologize to anybody who came looking for the show last week and didn't find one, because even though it was Thanksgiving and I had family in town, I had a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, those were excuses. I could have probably done a show after that Falcons win leading into the Jacksonville game. So anyway, it's our first show in a couple of weeks, brought to you by the good people at Bill Curry Ford. Black Friday is a thing you hear a lot about around Thanksgiving. It's always Black Friday, like year-round with Bill Curry Ford. You can go to the website right now, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out all the inventory, new, used, pre-owned. And when you do, okay, what I'm talking about is beyond just the transparent online pricing. You see everything right there in front of you. What I'm talking about is the unlimited miles, unlimited years, new, pre-owned, lifetime warranty. As long as you own the vehicle that you bought from Bill Curry Ford, it begins on the day you purchase it and goes all the way as long as you have it, all right? You get unlimited years and unlimited miles. You have a problem 5 years from now, it's still your car, take it to Bill Curry Ford. Powertrain warranty, baby. And I'll tell you what else, roadside assistance, 10 years. You don't need AAA or anything anymore, they'll take care of it. First year oil changes, bring them in, they do all that stuff for the first year. All these things come with any purchase over there at Bill Curry Ford. So these are the things that are the difference between any other place. And again, that's on top of the already transparent online pricing. You'll see, go to the website. If you want to go in person, go see Sean Sullivan, my good friend, the GM over there. They're a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, just north of Hillsboro. They're on the east side of the road. Been almost 60 years now serving the Tampa Bay area. Mention me or Joe Bucks Fan or the Free Stretch or any of that, and you'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. Thanks to them as well. It has been a fun few weeks, all right? It's not what we thought it would be, or maybe some of you did, but I'll admit to you, I was in pout mode going into the last couple of games. And again, it's not even because I didn't think the Bucks could win. I mean, certainly we knew the schedule was lightening up and we knew things were getting better. But it's just because I hate getting to this time of year every year and not being in a playoff race, not having the games matter, and I get cynical and jaded. And we do this every year. I mean, if you listen to the show for any amount of time, you already know all this. So, and the Falcons game happened. Looked pretty good. Nice win down or up there, and the, you know, everything was hunky-dory. Then they go to Jacksonville this past weekend in a game, and this is what impressed me, because Jacksonville's not good. We know that, okay? But it's hard to win in the NFL anytime, especially on the road. I don't care. And here's what else. After that Falcons game, and this is what you got to consider a lot of times, is what situation is a team in when they're going into a game? Because there are historical ways things tend to unfold that when you know what situation a team is in, it can tell you a lot more about the effort they put forth one way or the other. So going into the game Sunday, and I try to do some reading when it comes to like things like sports betting, and I don't bet on Bucks games, but I'm in a pool with a bunch of friends that I've been doing for years where we pick all the games against the spread, not straight up. And so I'm always trying to read things, look at angles and historical things, like I said. So there was an angle in Sunday's game, and it mainly applied to the Jags, but they were coming off like a couple of bad road losses, and teams that come off of two double-digit road losses in a row coming back home after that, that first game back at home, historically are like 75% against the spread in that game coming back. So I had done some reading about that going into the game, and I would have mentioned it on the show, but I didn't do one last week. You know, that was something that, again, it doesn't mean every single game applies to these things, but historically, teams in Jacksonville's situation do well, in that game coming home. And that made me think, hey, you know, even though the Jags are a bad team, you know, the NFL is kind of a rebound league. Whatever happened one week, usually the opposite happens the next week. I think I like the Jags. And I would never actually make a bet against the Bucks. I just would never do that. But as far as what I had a feeling, I was like, yeah, I think the Bucks rebound back to earth after that Atlanta game. I think the Jags probably play a lot better than they have been lately. I think this is a good spot for the Jags. This was all going through my head going into the game on Sunday. And it was, 25-0 or whatever it was? It felt like before you could get the popcorn bag open, everything was going right for the Bucks. They went out there and they did what a good team would do. Not just win a game against a bad team, but they overwhelmed a lesser team. And even though both teams were 4-7 going into the game, the Bucks looked like a team that belonged in the playoff race, and the Jags looked like a team that were 4-7. And so that was what probably pleased me the most. And I'm not saying the Bucks are in the playoff race, by the way. I know that if you go on Twitter this whole week, I mean, listen, I'm not going to fault anybody, okay? It's been 12 freaking years since we've even played in a playoff game, and it has been 17 years, almost half of my lifetime, which seems unbelievable to me. But it's been that long since the Bucks won a playoff game, and that one stands as Super Bowl 37, the last time that the Bucks won a playoff game. I had just graduated college. I was 22. And if you had told me that night when we were all celebrating in my Uncle Mike's backyard, my whole family, all the people that I'd been watching Bucks games with over all those years, if you told me that night, hey, Bobby, you're 22, you're just out of college, you don't have a job, you don't have a wife and kids, you don't have any money, you don't have anything, and the next time the Bucks win a playoff game, you'll have been married for over 10 years, you'll have two kids. I mean, all these things that I would have thought they were going to win the Super Bowl again the next season, much less not win a playoff game for almost 20 years. So I get why people are talking about it. It's really not realistic at this point, but you know what? I didn't come on the show today to tell you all the reasons why you shouldn't be excited. Screw it. Let's have some fun this weekend. The Bucks are mathematically alive. Now, without getting into all the really detailed scenarios here, if you want to, if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can read, Greg Allman did a little piece this week that actually details the exact scenarios and stuff like that. It's actually not that complicated. You know, the way the playoff situation works, you've got four divisions and you've got six playoff teams. So you get the four division winners. They are 1-4 no matter what, which I disagree with, but they're number 1-4 no matter what, and then the wild cards are 5-6 as far as the seeding. You've got an NFC West where you've got two really, really good teams in San Francisco and Seattle, both 10-2. Both of them have more wins than the Bucks could possibly get even if they win out. So one of those teams is the wild card, whoever doesn't win the NFC West. That leaves one wild card, and you've got the Vikings at 8-4 occupying it right now, the Rams at 7-5, Bears 6-6, Bucks 5-7. So all the talk around town. It's amazing what winning a couple in a row and 3 out of 4 will do to a psyche, because this is the same team, albeit they're playing a lot better, but it's the same team it was a few weeks ago, and all of a sudden now, hey, maybe they can win 4 in a row and go 9-7, and maybe 85 other things can happen. And of course it's absurd and ridiculous, but you know what? I'm not going to fault anybody for getting excited about it either. Because you deserve, if you're a Bucks fan, and you've actually been sticking with it like I have, well, I have my whole life, but even if you have been just for the past 10 years and you come back week after week, no matter what their record is, and you take your ass to the stadium or you park your ass in front of the TV and watch the game on TV or whatever it is, all right, if you do that, you deserve to have at least a little something to get excited about once the holidays roll around, and it hasn't happened very often in a long time. So go nuts, okay? I'll indulge you. Here are the scenarios. One, the Bucks, and they actually technically don't have to win out, but they almost certainly have to win out and go 9-7. That is unlikely enough, okay? That is almost certainly not going to happen. It would match the longest winning streak in the history of the franchise. I mean, even the Super Bowl team didn't win 5 in a row. It'd be 6 in a row if they did it. The Super Bowl team won 5 in a row, I believe. But so, first of all, you're playing, you got a couple teams that you could, you know, the Colts are struggling, although they're still in the playoff race. You've got the Falcons, who aren't very good. You've got the Texans, who aren't very good. And you've got Detroit, who isn't very good. That's in reverse order of how they play them. The Colts are up this week. But either way, let's say they did somehow pull that off, even though that part alone probably disqualifies the Bucks. You still need the Minnesota Vikings, and this is the hard part. The Minnesota Vikings need to lose all three of their remaining NFC games. And that's the part that in addition to the Rams needing to go, 1-3, or actually even if they went 2-2 in their final four, which is very possible, and the Bears need to lose a couple too. The Bears and the Rams actually are plausible to do what the Bucks need them to do. But the Vikings, because they would have the divisional tiebreaker, conference tiebreaker, if they won any of their NFC games. Even if they go 1-3, they could beat the LA Chargers. That wouldn't matter that much. But if they got, and they're all at home, Detroit, Green Bay, Chicago, if they win any of those three, it pretty much eliminates the Bucks, because even if they tied at 9-7, Minnesota would have a better conference record. So that part is extremely unlikely, in my opinion. And you can even make a case that the Green Bay one is on Monday Night Football 2 days before Christmas. They've got Detroit at home this weekend. Minnesota coming off a tough loss on a Monday night in Seattle. They look to bounce back at home against a lesser team like Detroit. And then the Chicago Week 17 finale, you'd need the Bears to win that one too, after having lost two of their other prior three, because, the chances, I know about all the Dumb and Dumber gifts people post online, or the Jim Mora gifts people post online, and it's all good fun. But realistically, that's where the Bucks are at. So I'm not going to be going into this game against Indianapolis thinking playoffs, but I'd also be lying if I said I hadn't already been on the ESPN NFL playoff machine, which lets you, fill in the results of future games, and then it shows you what the standings would look like in the event of those games. If you haven't discovered that yet, and you have an office job where you sit at a computer at your work, just make sure you've got a little bit of time before you open that thing up, because you're going to be there a little while. It's that fun to play with. I'd be lying if I said I haven't already done that, okay? I did that. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't start researching tiebreakers and all these things, which I know in my front of my mind, it's dumb. And it's silly, but we don't get to do this that often. And we shouldn't be happy. I'm happy they won the past two games. If you had told me before the season started they'd be 5-7 right now, I would not have been happy. And I'm not happy now. I'm just happier than I was when they were 3-7. Or when they were, 2-6, or all that stuff. So, it's gotten a lot better, and that's great. But what's also happened is their draft pick has gone from 6th to 14th with the two wins in the past 2 weeks. It could just as easily go back down with more losses. And so I've been thinking about, I guess what's the word I'm trying to come up with? Standardizing my approach. You know how you declutter around the house and you got papers laying around your desk, or you got clothes hanging over something that they should be folded or in the laundry or whatever? You just generally try and declutter, right? Or most people do. I mean, some people are addicted to clutter, but you know how you declutter? I'm trying to declutter in my mind. And what I'm saying here, this isn't just talking about the Bucks, this is in general. Just lately, I've just been trying to clean my mind up, And one of the ways I'm doing that is having systems in place. Not that I can no longer think for myself or anything, but having systems in place to when a certain situation comes up that commonly comes up, I know how to respond to it without having to fight these inner battles and, have all this self-doubt about, am I handling this the right way? Follow me on this. I know this sounds crazy, but here's how it applies to the Bucks. Every year, I go back and forth. Hey, winning creates a winning culture. Don't worry about the draft picks. Just root for your team to win and enjoy those 16 precious Sundays no matter what, and try to set aside anything about, cynicism and being upset they don't have more wins than they do. Or the other side of it is root for them to lose. The draft pick's more important. This game doesn't ultimately matter, but then in the future you'll be glad they lost because they got to pick an extra few spots. So over the years I've actually argued both sides of that, just depending on how I was feeling in any given year. So I decide, I need an approach that I'm going to stick with no matter what, and that I'm going to standardize where I don't have this inner battle anymore when the Bucks are, below 500 in November and December, which they almost always are. And instead, I know exactly how to handle it and exactly how to respond. So I've decided I'm on team win your games. First of all, it's the most obvious one, right? Team win your game. Let's win our games, right? Second of all, first of all, I think you're the draft is such a crapshoot that you're just as likely. It's almost like blackjack. You ever play blackjack and you see a guy at the table? Maybe he's right next to you. Maybe he's a couple seats down. And maybe he doesn't know about the game that much. And he's just one of these tourist types just playing to have fun, has no idea what the hell he's doing. And maybe he stands on 16 or on 15 when the dealer's showing 7 or greater. And you ever see the other person at the table, like next to him, saying, "Oh man," then they bust on their next hand, and they think that the guy who stood took their bust card or didn't take their bust card, and instead he gave it to, you know, people think that the guy's poor decision on his hand negatively affected their hand, when in reality, in blackjack, you play your hand and that's it. The guy making the mistake of not hitting could very well have hurt you or helped you. You have, you know, the chances of it are either way. I think the same thing applies to the draft. You know, sometimes you go from drafting fifth to drafting ninth because you won a game and you think that's just automatically worse, and you never know. It's possible you did better at ninth than you would have at fifth. It's possible the entire chain of events that unfolded because of that, you know, was different in a good way, and you almost don't even know these things ever sometimes, but you certainly don't know them for years and years in a lot of cases. So I'm not going to worry about three or four spots in the draft here or there anymore. I'm done doing that. I'm done, okay? We all need to, and somebody said this, and I've said it myself before, and I got away from it, but it really is true. We always talk about how the Bucks have a losing culture and how it's just ingrained into the Bucks that they're just losers and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's kind of harsh, but the point is, if you really believe that, okay, how do you build a winning culture? Is it sucking so bad that you get decent players? I mean, getting decent players does matter, but no, you build a winning culture by winning. Like, that's it. Like, you build a winning culture by winning. One of the most underrated games in franchise history, and you might, if you're an old school Buck fan like me, you might remember it or you might have heard about it because people in the media bring it up every now and then, but it was Tony Dungy's first year in 1996. And the Buccaneers that year, you know, they lost, I think it was their first five. They were 0-5. Then Dungy got his first win against the Vikings, the team he had been the assistant for. And then they were 1-whatever. Then they lost a few more. And then they beat the Raiders when Cole Ford for the Raiders missed like an 18-yard field goal that would have ended the game. And instead, the game went to overtime and Michael Houston won it. But they were still 2-8 or whatever. But then they got hot. In the final part of 1996, they started to win a few games, and they actually went out to San Diego. It was like it wasn't the last game of the year, but it was one of the final couple. And they were an underdog, and the Bucks had always had trouble on the West Coast. They were something like 2-15 in California or on the West Coast in franchise history. And they went out to San Diego, and they played their ass off, and they thumped the Chargers, who at the time were pretty decent, if I remember correctly. And it was like, it was the first time, if you remember what things were like in 1996, they were kind of like they are now, except we didn't have any history of winning. At least now we have 97 through 2002. Like, that happened. Before 1997, though, that hadn't happened yet. So, like, the entire franchise, except for 1979, was just garbage. So, for the Bucks to go out and get that win in San Diego, a lot of the Bucks players, Tony Dungy, they all said years later, after, you know, 1997, they broke through, went 10-6, and went to the playoffs, and they all, you know, went on to win the Super Bowl after that, obviously, and multiple playoff appearances. And they look back and they said that San Diego win was a big win for the team. Because, you know, they still, I mean, Warren Sapp was still pretty young. Derek Brooks was just, you know, Rondi Barber, all those guys were just there, John Lynch. And that was the coming together of something. And it was that whole finish to the 1996 season. But specifically, they point to that game in San Diego. Okay? And that's what psychologically kind of started turning things around from a franchise that was deemed to be losers to one that had a winning culture. And the Bucks under Tony Dungy, which eventually culminated with the John Gruden Super Bowl, had a winning culture. The way to get a winning culture is to win. You can do all the slogans you want. You can bemoan on the Monday after a loss how we lost because of our loser culture or whatever. But you don't lose because you had a losing culture. You have a losing culture because you lost. And it's the same with winning. So, in these final four games, whatever happens, and you know, with the Bucks Like I said, three of the four teams aren't great, and two of the four teams are absolutely already out of the playoffs. Maybe they could pull off something crazy, maybe not. But the point is, even aside from the whole playoff scenario thing, which is a pipe dream, keep playing well. Keep winning. Especially with the young guys. It's one thing when you have a team and you just suck and you're breaking the whole thing up and you're going to be rebuilding anyway. But we're in the process of the rebuild already. And the guys that are going to be here, see, the difference is sometimes you have the guys on your team where you know those guys aren't going to be the ones that are still there when you finally get good. But now I think we're at least at the point where we can look at the team and say, hey, next time that we're a team that plays in January, next time we're a team that contends for division championships, when I look at the field now, I believe the guys that will be on those teams are some of the ones that are on this team now. So it does matter when you have guys like Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, this young secondary, Sean Murphy Bunting. They've been playing really well the past few games. Devin White, you know, obviously he had the fumble for the touchdown. That was a great play, but that was kind of lucky. He was right there. There was nobody else around. Shaquille Barrett's the one who got the fumble. But Devin White also had an interception and just generally played very well throughout that game and has played very well throughout the past several weeks. You know, he missed the early part of the season. Bruce Arians even said he thinks that injury early on really set him back, you know, through camp and then the early part of the season. And since he's been healthy and finally starting to take reps and everything as a first-team guy, you look at what Devin White's done. These are the guys, I believe, I really do believe, not all of them necessarily, who could be part of what this team could be, what we all visualize it as possible. And it's not going to be this year. But again, you know, look at the 49ers. All right, the Bucs played the 49ers last season in Raymond James around this time of year. It was a couple weeks earlier. It was a little before Thanksgiving. And they were both crappy teams. I know San Francisco didn't have their quarterback, but I think Nick Mullins started the game. But other than that, the teams weren't that much different. And they were both crappy teams, but the 49ers were really crappy. And the Bucs just kicked their ass. It was, I remember it very well because I went to the game with my son. And it was two bad teams, but it felt like they were going in opposite directions. Like, hey, okay, you know, we may be bad, but we're not that bad. Like, San Francisco really sucks. And we kind of have some hope for next season. And what did San Francisco go and do? They're 10-2 right now. They're a Super Bowl contender. They're one of the favorites in the NFC. And I'm not saying that means the Bucs will be that next season, but it can happen that quickly, is all I'm trying to say. And so when you look at, and I would have never guessed that last season, you know, and the same thing happened 2 years ago. The Bucs played the Bears in the middle of the season. Again, both crappy teams, but the Bears were even crappier, and the Bucs kicked their ass. And the year after that, the Bears were playing in the playoffs and should have gone on to the divisional round. Had that crazy loss on wildcard weekend with the kick going off the uprights and all that. But, you know, they were a kick away from playing in the divisional round. Almost got there. So don't think that, like, you necessarily have to be years and years and years away and have this long, anguish-filled process to get to where you want to be. Although we have been doing that, right, the past few years already. So, anyway, my whole point is, my philosophy from now on, once the season ends and you tell me where our draft pick is, fine, then we'll start worrying about the draft. But not before that. I don't care. If we win and we're picking, and if the Bucks, let's say the Bucks go 8-8 or something like that, you know, they win 3 or 4 and they fall short, they could fall even further. The lowest draft pick for a non-playoff team is 20th. 21 through 32 are the 12 playoff teams. So the Bucs could be picking, if they win a few more, down there in the teens, somewhere like 16, 17, 18. I mean, who knows? And that's fine. I don't care where it is. Worry about it then. It's more important to win. It's more important for Jameis Winston as a developing quarterback to win, and he's still developing. It's more important for that young secondary to win. Shaq Barrett, Carl Nassib, Vita Vea, you know, we don't know who they're going to keep yet. They got a ton of free agents, and we'll do plenty of shows on that as the offseason gets nearer. But we're not in the offseason right now. We're in the middle of the NFL season. It's week 14. They're mathematically alive, and we play a struggling Colts team at home on Sunday afternoon. So what are you going to do about it? That's where I'm at mentally right now, and I know that's where the team is mentally too. Bruce Arians even said he wasn't shy about it. He flat out said, oh, yeah, I told him they're in the playoff race. We're going to play as if we're in the playoff race. And Jason Pierre-Paul said, yeah, you know, if we lose and we're out of it, then we'll try and be a spoiler and all that. And that part is one thing. But We're not that yet. We're still one of the teams competing, and we're going to keep competing. Good for them. I hope they kick the Colts' ass on Sunday. I'm not worried about draft picks anymore. I'm too busy having fun watching Bucks football, which, if nothing else, the past 2 weeks, sometimes you forget, right? Like, you forget this can actually be fun. Like, it's supposed to be fun. As a fan, it's entertainment. Our lives don't hinge on it. We don't get job promotions when they win. We don't have to pay a fine when our team loses. Like, there's nothing personally that any of us have riding on this. And yet, it's not fun, and we do it anyway when they're not winning. And when they start winning, you're like, oh, wait, yeah, this is actually fun. Like, Bucks games used to be fun every week, remember? Remember when we had a 100,000-seat waiting list for season tickets? And it was all the thing? And it's gotten so far from that on the other end of the spectrum that you can forget. And games like the last 2 weeks, and I'm sitting with my son, my innocent, sweet little 8-year-old son, who doesn't know anything about how the playoffs work. Yeah, I'm teaching him all that now, and doesn't know that or care about the records. And my buddy's son's the same way. I went over to his house this past weekend to watch the game, and he's like, yeah, my son, and his son's a year younger than mine. His is in first grade, mine's in second grade. And he's like, when the Bucks play, like, he just sits in front of the TV, and he just does not move. And then at halftime, he gets up and plays for a few minutes, and then he goes right back to the TV for the second half. And I was like, yeah, my son's getting to that point too. And we kind of smiled, and I said, they're us. Like, that was me when I was his age. And I said, maybe they'll grow up and be buddies just like we are and talk about the Bucks every Monday at school just like we did. I mean, I did all that from the time I knew what football was. And like I tell you guys on this show sometimes, I didn't care about anything. I didn't know the Bucks were 2-10 or 10-2 when I was 8 years old. I want to see it through those eyes. I want them to enjoy it. So we're going to have some fun for these final 4 weeks. So if you got a little extra hop in your step now because the Bucks went from 3-7 to 5-7 against two crappy teams, and really nothing in and of itself all that remarkable happened, but you feel good anyway, feel good. I feel good too. This is a feel-good edition of the Free Stretch. And they might go out and look terrible against the Colts this weekend, and we go back into off-season mode. But whatever, I'm still going to be back again, looking forward to the three games remaining after that. That's the resolution I've made with myself on how I'm going to handle these things from now on. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. On Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Same thing, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. Oh, I forgot to mention, congrats to Devin White for being officially named the NFC Rookie of the Month. Well-deserved, and I didn't even mention that when we were singing his praises a few minutes ago here on the show. But that was announced earlier this week. Looking at what else we've got on the plate that I wanted to say something about. I mentioned the playoff seeding. You know, it's getting more into focus now. And forget about the Bucks for a second, just looking at the overall league playoff seeding. There's going to be a scenario. I mean, it's pretty much already something you can tell that, like I said, whoever doesn't win the NFC West is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 12-4, maybe 11-5, maybe 13-3. But both teams are 10-2 right now. Whoever wins it will probably definitely be 13-3 or better. But even the person who or the team who doesn't win it could be 13-3, could be 12-4, could be 11-5. Then you've got the NFC East, and whoever wins that is probably going to be more in the neighborhood of 9-7. That's generous. The Cowboys lead at 6-6 with the Eagles at 5-7. So let's be generous and say the Cowboys go 3-1. I mean, they could go 10-6, but they're probably going to be 9-7 and maybe even 8-8. And so there's been a lot of arguing going back and forth, and here's the way the NFL does things. You know, like I said, four divisions in each conference, and then you've got the top four being the division winners, 1-4, and the wild cards, 5-6. So if you have a team that goes 13-3 or 12-4 and finishes second in their division, they are the fifth seed as a wild card, and they go on the road to number four, and that could be a division champion who went 8-8 or 9-7. And this happened once, I mean, it's happened more than once where the team with a better record is on the road. That happens actually kind of frequently, but where it's been a really, like, extreme example of it was a few years ago when the Saints had to go on the road to Seattle, and Seattle was 7-9 and won the NFC West that year, and they hosted, I think it was a 10-6 Saints team or 11-5, whatever it was, they were multiple games better than Seattle, and that was the Beast Quake run, if you remember, Marshawn Lynch, clinching the game with that incredible run. And, you know, home field played a factor in that game. I think it was safe to say, and Seattle won the game and moved on. So there are two schools of thought. Some people believe, screw you, dude. Win your division, man. It's very simple. You don't win your division, you go on the road. And then the other school of thought is, well, one team is like four games ahead of the other one in the standings, so it's kind of dumb to act like the team that won their division actually did something more worthy of credit than the team that won four extra games. I'm in, you probably know me if you've listened to this show, and you know I'm a rational thinker, and so you know I'm in team number two. Obviously, the team with the better record should host the playoff game. I think it's a really knuckleheaded stance to say, dude, shut up and win your division, man, when all things are obviously not created equal. If you have a division, and all divisions are based on is geography in most cases, although you also have some historical things like the NFC East having the Cowboys and stuff like that, but mainly they're random. I mean, these are assignments of teams. These are groupings of teams that are, for the most part, arbitrary. I mean, they're just based on non-football things. They're not completely arbitrary. They're based on geography, but in a given year that you go 12-4, let's say, if another team in your division went 13-3, or if another team in your division went 6-10, has nothing to do with you. And so the people that seem to want to say, don't complain, shut up and win your division, I mean, I don't know if they lack analytical skills or if they can't see that there are external factors that have nothing to do with the teams themselves that determine, you know, if you win your division or not, not just your record. I mean, if you're 12-4 and you're in second place in a division, and you're 8-8 in another one, and you win the division, is the 8-8 team like more deserving of a home playoff game? Do you really, if you really think that, okay. But I haven't heard anybody make a compelling case for why, except, dude, stop your whining, dude. Just win your division, man. Oh my God. You know, and I think that's pretty idiotic. Now, if you want to say for simplicity's sake, you know, why even have divisions if we're not going to give the division winners a home playoff game? Listen, I think you should be guaranteed a playoff spot if you win your division. So the way I would do it is almost the way they do it now. I'd say that the six playoff teams are the four division winners and the next two best records. So you can't miss the playoffs if you win your division. But the home field part, no, I would see them 1-6 based strictly on record after that. So all winning your division does is get you a home playoff game. And then I would reverse the knucklehead argument and I'd say, dude, don't complain, shut up and win more games. If you didn't win your if you won your division, you have to go on the road. You shouldn't have gone 8-8. You should have gone 11-5. Then you'd be at home. That's what I would say to that. So it's probably going to happen this year. I mean, it's mathematically almost clinched that the wild card team in the five spot will go on the road to a team with a lesser record. But it could end up being really, really, really drawn out if the 49ers or Seahawks end up, you know, both going 13-3 and one loses on a tiebreaker, and then the Cowboys are something like 8-8. It'd be a five-game spread between two playoff teams with the team five games behind hosting it. And that hasn't happened yet, but that's definitely on the table, and I don't think a system should exist where that's even possible. So if it's up to me, that's the only change I would make to the NFL's playoff format. Of course, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, the reports coming out now are that a seventh playoff team is on the table, and it's going to be, you know, 7-2, and then 6-3, and 5-4, and there'd be only one team with a first-round bye and that whole thing. I don't imagine if they do that, they'll change anything about the way they seed the teams either, but that's a whole other thing. So just wanted to get my two cents in, as I know we're going to have this situation come up this year, and it comes up, it seems like, every other year or so, and even though I don't foresee it changing, I think it's wrong. One thing I forgot to mention, I meant to do this earlier when I was talking about the Jacksonville game, but we've got some advanced numbers, which I always like to give you all the numbers whenever we can, and I do a little segment on my Lightning show that I do on Lightning Power Play called Numbers Corner, so we'll do a little Numbers Corner now here as we wrap things up. You know, the way they grade players has changed. There's people like Pro Football Reference, Pro Football Focus. Even ESPN does some advanced stats stuff right now. So there's stats that you didn't used to have that you have now. One of those has to do with upfront. And, you know, we've harped on the offensive line on this show a lot and, you know, maybe too much sometimes. I know that I'm pretty hard on the tackles especially. But overall, the new age stat, I don't even want to say new age, but the stat that's kind of become in vogue is now win rate. whether it be pass rush win rate or pass block win rate. And what it basically is it rates players on their ability to either block or beat a block within or for 2.5 seconds. So if an offensive lineman blocks his man for 2.5 seconds, they call that a pass block win. If the rushing player gets by his blocker, beats his blocker within 2.5 seconds and gets pressure on the quarterback in that time, that's a pass rush win. So there's a few individual Bucks who are having particularly good years in these categories. First of all, we'll start on defense, and they ranked them by, and this is on ESPN. If you go to ESPN's NFL page, it was an article that was up there. They ranked them by outside linebackers and defensive ends, kind of since there's 3-4s and 4-3s, that's kind of one category, and then defensive tackles are another. In the defensive end outside linebacker category, you may not be surprised to know Shaq Barrett, 7th in the NFL amongst eligible players in pass rush win rate. So he's done very well for himself, and we can obviously see that, what he's done all season long, up to and including the Jacksonville game. Vita Vea is also up there at 8th amongst defensive tackles in pass rush win rate. As far as ranking overall teams, the Bucs are 3rd in the National Football League. And even in, I was even surprised it was that high. I thought it would be pretty good, but it's even better than I thought because I know their run defense has been that good. But they're 3rd overall in pass rush win rate as a defensive front altogether. And so, you know, what you're seeing the last 2 weeks is kind of a natural progression of both the pass rush and seeing the secondary now starting to gel a little bit, young guys who are starting to maybe come into their own a little bit. At least that's what we all hope. And then, of course, on offense, I'd be remiss because I ripped the offensive line a lot. Ali Marpet ranked, as far as guards go, 6th in the entire National Football League of all eligible guards in pass block win rate. He does a very good job, and we know Ali Marpet, what a player he is. And the Bucks overall up the middle haven't been that bad, although the tackles with DeMar Dotson and Donovan Smith have been disappointing. If you want the overall number there, they are 19th in pass block win rate as a team, which is honestly better than I thought, even though that's below average and it's not great. I would have guessed they were somewhere in the 20s if you had told me to guess. So in all fairness to the offensive line, and in fairness to Joe, because on Joe Bucks Fan, you've seen articles and Joe has said it a few times that people always harp on the offensive line, and it's usually not as bad as people think when you actually look inside the numbers, and he's posted a few things. So they're 19th overall in that stat. Although here are a couple of other numbers that I came across while doing all this. One of those is there's 36 quarterbacks who qualify as having taken enough snaps to qualify for this stat. Only 5 have been sacked more than 6 times within 2.5 seconds of the ball being snapped. They are Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Sam Darnold, Jameis Winston, and Andy Dalton. So those 5 out of 36 have had that much pressure just within 2.5 seconds of getting the ball. Another one is the Bucs are one of 3 teams that have allowed 40-plus sacks in each of the last 3 seasons. Arizona and Washington are the other 2. They are on pace. They've already allowed 41 this year, so they already qualify for the number. They're on pace, though, to allow 53 this season. So, you know, I still think protection is a bit of an issue. It hasn't been as much of an issue the past couple of weeks, and that's one reason why you've seen the Bucs succeed as much as they have. We'll see what happens against the Colts this weekend. But hey, either way, the point is, this is a feel-good edition of the show because I feel good. The Bucs have been playing well. The games are fun. It's not just those 3 hours either. All week long now, I'm looking forward to Sunday at 1 o'clock. I'm looking forward to Bucs-Colts. And I don't know what's going to happen. They're not going to win every game forever. And even if they do, they're not going to make the playoffs this year. But psychologically, there's something about hope, there's something about energy, and there's something about having a little bounce in your step that makes all this other stuff worth it. And at the end of the day, it's supposed to be fun. I hope you've had fun listening to this show today. I want to thank our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford and Sean Sullivan over there, everybody taking care of you guys. I want to thank the Joes for giving me this platform. I want to thank all of you for listening. Enjoy the game on Sunday. No bye weeks for anybody. 16 games on the slate, starting with Cowboys, Bears, all the way through Monday Night Football. I'll talk to you all next week. In the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
And anyways, our new coach hasn't been doing anything for the team.